Good morning. So if you hate, what do you think is going to happen? What are you hoping will happen? Right? Here in this congregation, we take care of our own. Right? Here in this town, we take care of our own. Here in Packer country, we take care of our own. Don't show up in the parking lot with a Vikings sticker on your car. Right? We take care of our own. Because, like I said to the kids, biology says, if there is no we, if there's only me alone, I'm going to die. I won't make it through the night. I'll get eaten, right? My chances of surviving are an awful lot better if I'm in a group. I just have to make sure I'm in the group that I belong in. And, well, then we know what happens to the folks that aren't in my group, right? I hate those folks, right? Don't you just hate it when, you know, I'd like to see volume 2 in terms of what you have in your hate list, right? As children, we're all taught, don't hate, don't hate, don't hate. But what happens to us as adults, right? There is this subtle message in the opposite direction. Well, good people, you know, we don't actually hate, but let's just say we have an intense dislike for the ones who aren't getting it right, who aren't doing it right, who aren't driving the right car, who aren't voting the correct way, who are consuming too much fuel, not enough fuel, not the right kind of fuel. PETA, what a lovely acronym. Everybody knows what that stands for, right? That's the other version, people eating tasty animals, right? There's also people for the ethical treatment of animals. And right away, we found a way to turn it into us and them, right? Hate, right? To passionately detest, to loathe or abhor. Latin from abhorre, to shrink back in horror or fear. To passionately detest. Right? Which is where this newer term has come from that's starting to show up now, the hate crime. Not just your ordinary crime. This is crime with a dollop of whipped cream over the top, right? It's a crime of bias and prejudice driven by race, sex, or religion. But what it requires is prejudice, prejudgment. This morning, drinking coffee, I read a story about what's going on in India right now. Modi, is that his name, right, who's now in power, right? And he's very pro-Hindu. So it turns out about 80% of Indians are Hindu, the other 20%, well, you know. And one of that fraction of the other 20% is Muslim. And I saw a story this morning about a guy who was walking down the street and was beaten for no reason other than he was wearing clothing that made him look as though he was Muslim. Turns out he is a Muslim practitioner, but this was a crowd of strangers that beat him, a crowd of Hindus, just because he wore the wrong kind of clothes. Right? So this is what's happening in the adult world. And at some level, I can read that story and say, oh my gosh, that's horrible, right? But then, well, and then I went on reading and I got to Huffington Post and to my MSNBC feed, and I got fed all kinds of stuff about the horrible atrocities that are happening here politically. The subtle subtext being, don't you just hate it when he does that, when they did this, when look who they appointed to be in charge of the coronavirus. Oh my God, right? I hate that. We are constantly fed these messages from our information bubble, from the ones that want us to be part of that group, about how to think about this. Right? We are being trained, I am being trained to prejudge, to decide before knowing by grouping a whole bunch of people and painting them all with the same brush. Right? So of course, well, that doesn't really happen in this congregation because how does it go in Lake Wobegon, right? We're all, what's the line? The men are strong, all the women are good looking, and all the children are above average. And so of course, we are also all above average. Who's got an order of service this morning? Did everybody pick one up? Yeah. Who's got one with this color? Right? Hold that one up. Right? I want to see all the ones that are purple. Right? Everybody got a purple one? Okay. That's good. That's good. I'm glad you guys are here. Very nice. Now, there was another color. Can I see the ones with... Oh, okay. All right. Oh, you got two. Well, there's always an outlier, right? The purple ones again. I want to see the all you purple folks. Thank you for smiling, because I'm glad you're part of the purple crew, right? That's really good news. And so I want to talk to you about the red ones. Everybody, red ones. That's group two. Okay. Just so you know, you're group two. Okay. Group ones. Who's in the group one? Did you get a? Oh. All right. We can talk later. I am glad you're here, though. I'm really pleased that you're here. And that is this trite, polite kind of a response when I'm in a place of fear and I run into someone who's in the other group, right? And so this was a little contrived, right? And so this morning I talked about, you know, Vans versus Jordans and the right kind of water bottle, but when I was discussing this with my daughter and her boyfriend a couple of weeks ago, they said, well, let's do some of the serious stuff. So I'm gonna do the serious stuff with you as well. Think back to high school. Think back to college. Show of hands. Who was in choir? Choir. Who was in choir? Chorus. Thank you. Chorus or choir. Either way, that's cool. Okay. Now, I want a show of hands of the real musicians. Who was in band and orchestra? Okay. Uh-huh. And choir people, right? What did it feel like to be kind of potentially a second-class musician, right? I mean, you don't really have an instrument, do you? Right? Yeah, well, that's what they claim, right? But it's not really. It's not for real. And everyone in band and orchestra, right, you knew. You knew that this was true, right? Musical theater. Okay, another outlier, the same outlier. Cool for you. So the point being that we can have this conversation. Is that an instrument or not? You know, we could just clear this up if we had a few more facts to discuss and present. And that is often typically the remedy for this kind of discord and disagreement about who's got it right. Let's just look at the facts here, right? And once the facts can present themselves openly, clearly, in an unbiased way, well, then you'll realize you're wrong and you'll get along with me. And you know what? I actually have a study that proves, I actually have two studies that show that presenting facts don't actually change anybody's mind. And the person I explained that to said, you know what, I still think it works, right? And this is so common. You know, I do this too, right? Global warming. Talk to me about global warming. I'll cite the statistics. I'll cite all the stuff as if somehow that's going to change this other person's mind, right? It doesn't seem to have worked for me. Maybe it's worked for you, not for me, right? Typically, it does not work. Why? Why? Why is that? That dislike for the other's opinion, that anger or that fear that shows up, that pushback, it's like, well, okay, you can think that if you want, but you're going to be wrong, right? There's this kind of keep it away. There's this emotion that goes with it. It's not really about the facts. It's an emotional argument that's being stated. And I'm trying to get you to change your emotional position to be in alignment with mine. The piece that's missing in those conversations almost every time is that underneath those emotions, there is deep caring. That's why I feel, because I care, right? I have this strong reaction to band or choir or orchestra because I care about the music. I care about how I was engaged and involved. It was important to me, right? Ask any of the music folks. Ask Ken. Ask Mayor. Ask Beth. They take their jobs seriously. They care. They care, right? And if you cross them, watch out, right? There's emotion there. It's not like, oh, well, whatever. We'll just do something. That's not true. The opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of hate is not love. The opposite of either of them is indifference. That's the real opposite. Hate and love are divided by this extremely thin line. The question is, how do you flip from one to the other? You don't do it by going through logical, reasoned argument. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in the political mess that we're in. You do it by trying to look underneath, right? What is this thing that I care about? Right? And if I care about this thing, can I also understand what you care about? Can I find out what gets you out of bed in the morning? Right? And I hear this argument that you're presenting to me, that you've got an absolute reason for doing it your way. Cool. What is it that's so important about that? Tell me why you care. Right? Who could argue against the idea of, we want safe streets? Right? It would be nice if anybody could walk down the street at any time and not have to worry for their physical safety. Who could say, no, I don't want that? Right? The question is, how do you go about getting that? Right? Do we do that by building a border wall? Do we do that by issuing military weapons to the local police department? Do we do that by offering, violence intervention training after a service? Right? How do we do that? There is a whole variety of ways to go after that. But if you and I are on opposite sides of this project and you say, we could do that by having guns issued to everybody, and we're in big trouble here because there aren't any guns in here because there's a sign on the door that says, keep the guns out. This is actually more dangerous because there isn't anybody here to enforce the safety, right? That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is my chances of getting hit by a bullet go way up if there's a gun in the room. And if there's no gun in the room, chances are I won't get shot. Right? So we have differences of opinion about how to do it, but we're in agreement that it's not okay to get hurt. If we can get the conversation down to that point, then all of a sudden there's no disagreement anymore. But you know what they say, you know, haters are going to hate because that's just what they do, right? That's just what they do. So let me offer you a little suggestion. In the history of calming down, right? Have you ever been into a situation, right, where there's something that's been anxiety producing and somebody says, calm down, there's nothing to be afraid of. What happens? Does anybody calm down? No. In the history of calming down, there's never been anybody who's ever calmed down by being told to calm down. Right? I'm laying in bed at night and I'm afraid because there's a monster under my bed and my mom says, don't be afraid. Right, Mark, because you don't know what this monster really looks like, right? So of course you're going to say that, and I'm still afraid, right? So I'm going to propose, in the history of hating, nobody has ever stopped hating by being told, stop hating. Because it goes against the biology that's running in us, and we are still these very primitive biological creatures. It's us versus them. It's us versus them. And if you're telling me I got to stop hating them, you're basically trying to tell my biology do something that's going to put me in danger because I know about the twos, right? Because I've been told how to feel about them. It's not actually even okay for me to shake hands without protection, right? And now you're telling me stop hating and I'm supposed to come over here? There's this very primitive kind of reptilian brain reaction that says, but I'm not sure. Right? This tiny, small voice underneath that says, I'm not so sure that's safe. I'm not so sure that's safe. That's the us and them reaction. What we have to do is learn how to we better. Right? If our we became a little bit bigger, it might include a subgroup that I now consider to be them instead of us. It could become just a little bit bigger. And then maybe I wouldn't be as prone to hearing some of that input that tells me, be careful, it's them, watch out. The other thing that Paul said this morning is that hate is really inefficient, right? And so what I'm proposing is that hate is actually a very ineffective, inefficient way of expressing caring. It's an inefficient way of expressing caring. Because you might never actually get to hear what it is I care about. You only know the thing that I hate. I hate those guys, you know, the ones that do this. Don't you, Andy Rooney, I loved Andy Rooney. He was so funny. Don't you just hate it? Let's talk about kitchen faucets. Don't you just hate it when this? I don't know what you like. I don't know what your want is. I know what your diswant is, what you're pushing away, what is your aversion, right? And that's where that slides into this Buddhist teaching. You knew it was coming, right? I mean, here I am, right? So it's the second noble truth. Attachment and aversion are the cause of all suffering. I'm not talking about pain. I'm talking about mental suffering, emotional suffering. I'm attached to something. I want to avoid something else. That attachment and aversion, that push and pull, is what causes all of the human suffering that's ever existed. This was the big light bulb moment for the Buddha 2,500 years ago. It hasn't changed much. Right? Today, we're being tribalized, right? And I was told by my daughter, don't say that, because that already has some kind of psychosocial contextualization. There's a word. In it, right? We're being kettled. We're being lumped into these groups. We're being told it's that group that's causing trouble, right? And we are not part of that group, so we are obligated to have to take action. We've got to do something. We've got to save the planet. My gosh, the place is going up in flames. It's us and them. It's us and them. But what I want them to do is go against their innate biology and step into the thing that frightens them. And I don't even know what it is they care about. And when that level of conversation is at that point, don't make me give up my SUV. Don't make me stop. You can't. Because why? Because, well, I want to feel good about who I am. I might want to have a nice warm house at night. Right? There's reasons why I care, and it expresses itself in the things that I want and the things that I do. How dare you tell me that I can't buy a car that gets 8 miles per gallon? Right? How dare you? This is America, after all, right? I can spend my money any way I want. Well, yes, except there's another group that's saying, no, you shouldn't be able to have that right, because that affects all of us. Your freedom, your right to decide, stops at the end of my nose. Right? That's this joke throwaway line. The problem is that we're living so close together, our noses are commingling now, right? The coronavirus is showing that to us. There's no more us and them. There's only we. There's only we. And now all of a sudden that kettling, that need to decide who's in and who's out, actually makes a lot of trouble. Because it's so easy to prejudge. I do it a lot. I am guilty, guilty, guilty. I do it a lot. And what I've learned by wearing this costume is that I'm not going to die if I ask someone that I appear to disagree with, what do you care about? Why is this so important? One of the tools I learned for how to do that came out of this book, small text, but I'll read it for you. Nonviolent Communication, A Language of Life by Dr. Marshall Rosenberg. Think about that last name for a minute, Rosenberg, right? Do you think he had any experience of the in-group and the out-group experience? Maybe so, right? Part of his cultural and religious heritage puts him into a target group, right? It's those folks that experienced a lot of prejudice and bias. And at times, people were quite happy to try to completely exterminate them. Marshall Rosenberg came up with a way to try to deal with this kind of in and out thing. But before we go to that, I want to tell a little story about a rabbi who was approached. So one of the important things is to celebrate the holidays and the holy days and do the remembrances, right? And so the Sabbath begins on Friday evening, right? At what time? When does the Sabbath begin? Sundown. How long does it last? Is it sundown or sunup? Sundown to sundown. Well, then I got it wrong. It wasn't the Sabbath. The story was that a person approached the rabbi and said, how do I know when the ceremony is over? And what they wanted to know was, when is sunrise? How light does it have to get for it to be sunrise? The question was, is it when I can't see the last star in the sky? Is that when we can say sunrise starts now? Or is it when the sun peaks over the horizon and you get the first glimmer of rays of light coming through? Is that when sunrise happens? How is sunrise defined? The rabbi answered, when there is enough light in the room that you can look a stranger in the eyes and see them as your friend. That's when the darkness ends. That's when the sun has risen, right? When you can look a stranger in the eyes and see them as a friend. How do you do that when there's this person spewing, right? How do you do that when we all know what the right and socially acceptable things to do are, but there's somebody here who's not doing that. They're a little bit different. I'm sorry?
Wonky.
A little bit wonky, right? Right? How do you do that? What do you say? Right? So Rosenberg has a way of unpacking that with nonviolent communication. This was the tool that he developed. And there's study groups and practice groups all over the country that are learning how to do this. There used to be one here. Kerry Duma was involved. And now I guess it's moved to the Waukesha Church. Are there people here this morning that are involved with nonviolent communication? Raise your hand. Yeah, there's a number of them. Mark Overs and stand up, please. I'm too scared to remember your name. So, Lynn Smith, thank you so much. And Greg, thank you. So these folks have had a chance to practice this language tool. And it's relatively simple to learn. There's four simple, easy steps. Observation, feeling, needs, and requests. And there's practice groups, and you can learn how to do this. It's a pretty slick verbal tool for how to slide behind the hatred and anger or fear to get at what Marshall Rosenberg describes as the unmet need. Right? Buddhism, Zen talks about the thing which I value, right? This thing that's triggering and driving all the emotion. And Rosenberg talks about the unmet need because that's what's driving it. There is an unmet need, a need to be heard, a need to be safe, a need to feel accepted, a need to feel well fed. We don't know what it is. What I do know is you're angry and I hear stuff coming at me and my initial reaction, because I have mirror neurons just like you do, my initial reaction is when you're angry with me, I get angry right back. Right? And now it's a game of fist, stick, knife, gun. Nobody wins that one. If I can feel safe enough, if I can maybe feel brave enough because I don't actually feel safe enough, if I have a tool in my pocket, if I have not become a tool, but if I have a tool, then maybe I can use some of that languaging to help me understand what's happening in you. You seem really upset. You seem really worked up. What is it you're wanting? What is the unmet need? And there are very nice ways of presenting that. That might be a little clumsy if you just deliver that to somebody wearing the wrong color hat or whatever. But there are cool ways to do it. And so I encourage you, explore that a little bit, because if you don't, you're going to be a tool, because you're going to be emotionally manipulated. And it's that emotional hook that the folks who are fighting this war of greed want you to bite. And the bait they put on it is outrage, is fear, is sadness, is concern, is joy. That hook is baited with emotion. It's not baited with reason. It's baited with emotion. And they're constantly tossing it out. Don't believe me. What do you get on the MSNBC feed? What do you get on the Pacific News Network feed? What do you get on the Fox News feed? When's the last time anybody in here has looked at Breitbart Network? Right? Yeah. It's so interesting. Right? Vitriol. Oh my goodness. But then, well, I look at HuffPost. Vitriol. Right? It's the same. We are being kettled. And you're either going to learn to use a tool or you're going to be a tool. And I would encourage you, learn to we better so that there's no more us and them. Because we are all in this together. The coronavirus is showing this to us. The rising CO2 levels in the atmosphere are showing this to us. And now I have my favorite Google app, Maps. There is no place called away anymore. There is no place to send them to send them away. Where do you cast them out to? Where's the desert? Where are the barren wastelands? There is no more out there and away. There's only here and now. And the world keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller. We have to find a way so that we embrace all of us everywhere, each of us, No matter who, no matter what, no exceptions. Well, yeah, but, you know, except for the ones that really deserve it, like, you know, well, there was Hitler, right? He always gets trotted out, you know. How about Osama bin Laden, right? Justifiable righteousness. You know, we did the right thing. Well, and what now? Nixon. We can look at Nixon in the rearview mirror, you know. And, well, what about Trump? What about Roger Ailes? What about Bill Cosby? What about one of my favorites, the Koch brothers? Right? Unconditional kind regard. That's what the Dalai Lama says. That's what Zen teaches. What did Jesus say? Love one another. No exceptions. How do we get to that? How do we get to that when we're being kettled in the way we have been by our media, by these information bubbles? We're constantly being fed emotional instructions for how to feel and who's in and who's out and who's right and who's wrong. And we never get to the part that's underneath. What do you care about? Why is this important to you? So, listen for the intense emotion when someone approaches you. They're saying stuff. We shouldn't be shutting down all the coal power plants because we're going to run out of electricity if we do. Listen for the intense emotion that's behind the statement. Right? Don't engage. Don't convince me with facts. My mind is already made up. That was my dad's favorite line. And I ran out of words to say. It's like, what am I going to say now, Dad? You're telling me no more facts, right? It's like, I'm stuck. Right? Because I didn't know how to ask him, so how do you feel, Dad? Right? But when someone comes at me with a statement like that, now I can ask him, so why do you feel so strongly about that? I hear that you feel really strongly. I get that. Much of what people want is just to be recognized and heard, to have their experience validated as this is what you're experiencing. I get that. I may not agree with it, but I understand you're upset. You're angry, you're hurt, you're afraid. Listen for what they are caring for. What do they care deeply about? Do they really want coal-fired power plants? Or are they wanting no power shortages? I don't want an accidental blackout, right? That may be what they want. Or maybe they want their security cameras to not go down so that they don't get burglarized. I don't know what it is. But I hear there's intense emotion, there's caring, and somewhere underneath that is an unmet need. Learn to frame it so you have a common need with this other person. And then it becomes we. Then it's no longer us and them. A need for safe streets, good jobs, clean air. Who could be upset with that? Nobody would say, I want dirty air. Please sign me up for that. Right? I want us all to have crappy, low-paying jobs. Nobody would say that. And yet, how do we get there? What we do to achieve that goal, there's some very profound differences. And there's some very intense differences of opinion about what the right thing is to do. Let's talk about that. Because I don't know either. You know? I'm pretty small in the big scheme of things. And I have my opinion about what the right thing to do might be. But part of that is driven by my prejudgment. Part of it is driven by the information I've been given, by the studies that I read, and I make up my mind only knowing part of the story. And unfortunately, Paul Harvey is dead, so I can't hear the rest of the story. Because when you hear the rest of the story, then all of a sudden it starts to make more sense. The first thing you have to know about me is that I'm not like you. As soon as you realize that, the rest will make more sense. Your need, your want, the thing that's unmet in your life may not be exactly the same as mine. Once I recognize that and I respect you enough to realize you're different from me, then maybe we can learn to respect each other. And now we can talk about what makes sense to do. You know, those unsightly, those awful. Do you know how ugly that is? When I go down to the shore and I look and I see all, they want to put wind turbines up in Door County. Do you know how that's going to wreck the view? Do you know how much money I spent to get a condo on the shore, and now they're going to put this garbage out there for me to stare at? Heck no, I'm not going to allow that rezoning to happen. Are you kidding? Are you kidding? Right? So that's one side of the argument. And then there is the other side of the argument. What do I want? I want a quality of life. What does this other person want? They want a quality of life. Let's talk about that. How do we have good lives together? How do we enjoy where we live and what we can see? If I can learn to frame it so that we have a common need, all of a sudden we're not fighting anymore. Right? Marshall Rosenberg was asked to go to a conflict with migrant farmers and a bunch of orchard owners in Northern California, fruit tree growers, right? And they brought in migrant workers. And there was this giant dispute going. And Marshall Rosenberg asked them, well, what's your opening statement? What's your opening statement? And the migrant workers say, these guys are racist. This is awful. We can't work here anymore. And the orchard growers were saying, these folks have no respect for law and order and regulation. And when he got down to unpacking a little bit more of what is the unmet need here, it turns out they both shared the same unmet need. They wanted to earn a living. And the orchard growers had fruit that needed to be picked and sold in order for them to earn a living. The migrant workers needed a clean, safe workspace to work in so they could get paid and so they could have a living wage. And once they both realized, we're in the same boat. We have to figure out how to not swamp the boat. It's not us and them anymore. We have to learn how to we. Because if we can't we this solution, the fruit rots in the fields. And the orchard growers don't get their pay, and the migrant workers don't get their pay. This is the same approach that was used in Northern Ireland with the Protestants and the Catholics. This is the same approach that's being used now in Israel with the Palestinians and the Jews. We have a common shared interest. Nobody wants to die. We have children. We would like their lives to continue on. When we get to that level, now it's we again. Right. Observation, feelings, needs, requests. Don't bite the emotional hook. It's so inefficient. It's so inefficient. So, on that cheery note, it's time for Polylon. We have just a couple of minutes. What is it that you would care to offer? What's your reaction to this pretty intense service? Somebody asked me last Sunday, oh, you did the easy one, the love service. And I said, no, that was the hard one, because I had a hard time not crying in that one. This one, I don't have a hard time crying through hate, right? What was it like to hear this morning? What was it like to be kettled and segregated? Did you get a purple order of service or a red one? You a choir person or you a band person?
Hi, this is Mike. I came across a book last week. It's called Hate Incorporated. It's by a journalist named Matt Taibbi, T-A-I-B-B-I. And on the cover is a picture of Sean Hannity and Rachel Maddow. And I saw it in the store, and I said, now how can this be? Because I'm an MSNBC guy. But boy, it is an eye-opening book how both sides distort. And I can't watch MSNBC with the same angle as I used to. It was just eye-opening. I urge everybody to read that book. It's about 300 pages. I read it in one day. I couldn't put it down. So.
My name is Erin. I had to work really hard to get this one, because as much as I love Jim, he was shoving this one at me.
The purple one, so you got a red one. Okay.
So I don't know if that's a metaphor for anything or if that's just a bunch of nonsense. I don't care. I just had to say that. And one of the things that I heard somewhere maybe 20 years ago, and it might have been Stephen Covey, or somebody else at the same time. Seek first to understand rather than to be understood. And unfortunately, I couldn't remember the instructions of how to do that because it's so hard to try to understand, and you gave us some tools, so thank you. And the other thing I heard even way before that was to be careful of having contempt before investigating. And it's hard to catch myself in that because my big thing is people who don't stop at four-way stop signs.
Don't you just hate that?
I hate that. Yeah. And those roundabouts are just nuts. Yeah. So I just wanted to contribute to Paul's list. Okay.
I'm with you. Yeah. We've got time for maybe two more.
Eric, this is Phil. And thank you so much for your comments, your whole approach. I love it. And a lot of people know I work for Citizens Climate Lobby on climate action. And in our national organization, the same approach is talked about constantly. Listen well. And that's what it's about. Get to the underlying concern. Yeah. When you're talking to someone that maybe isn't believing in climate change, but most people have that underlying love for this earth and for the environment. Yeah. Get to that point, and you can build on it. You may not find agreement right away, but in the long run, it works.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, if you listen deep enough, long enough, there will eventually be agreement, and from that point, you can work forward. Yeah.
This is Lynn. Just a pitch for NVC. It is a really powerful tool, skill to have, and it's crazy cool how, like, you know, it's a very much of a, you know, you're practicing situation, you know, communicating. It's a practice environment. And you come up with a situation and you get a page of feelings, listing out feelings, and you're, what are you feeling? And it's so interesting because it'll go clunk when it's the feeling you're having, but you don't always, like, can identify it real quickly. But you go through the list, go clunk, that's the feeling, and then what's the need? It's the same thing, one page of needs that all humans have, that, you know, that's our common humanity. What's the need? So you're not only identifying yours, but the other person involved. Very powerful.
Yeah. One more? This is Kristen. Just two quick things. One is I was at a General Assembly a few years ago with Reverend Nate Walker, who's a UU minister that I highly recommend a lot of his writing. But he did an experience with us in the workshop where they showed a video of a woman who was just irate. I think it was maybe the topic of abortion or something, but he silenced her. We first heard it, and then he silenced her words. And so we could just see her facial expressions and then talked. He said, now imagine that someone has just died or that she's sad or, you know, other feelings, and it looked exactly the same. So that was pretty powerful. And then the other thing that is more of like what I'm struggling with, which is our adult children have seem to have a lot of hate, and you really framed it well over more, you know, what is that? It's rooted in deep caring about social issues, which... Right. You know, I think we showed them here. Yeah. But I don't know in our society if hate has become kind of a surrogate for, like, the level of outrage that you have. Mm-hmm. So I think it's almost like to give up that hate means I don't care.
Right. And that's not true, is it?
And they have kind of turned it on us sometimes and said that us liberal folks, you know, are just hiding out in our... love, and I really think it comes down to passion and action, right. You know, more than anything else, but
absolutely.
I think both sides jump onto that outrage and hate as a surrogate.
Yeah, thank you. One more.
I have the microphone here, but I'm sorry that I'm the last one, but what I was going to say was I love that the intranet has made it a lot easier to contact our elected officials to express our opinions. However, I've noticed when I get information from some of the organizations that I am on the mailing list, that when I read the responses that they want me to send to my congressman or my senator, that they are incendiary. Am I saying that correctly? Sorry, incendiary. And I often change the words before I send it because I don't want to be that person that is trying to fuel it. But I recognize that my side is playing the same game, and I don't like it either, you know.
Yeah. Get up, get off the couch, but don't light the torch. Thank you for the feedback. And everybody, talk to Al and talk to Terry. You both had your hands up for more feedback. I'm sorry we're out of time. But I do want to hear what you have to say. Maybe we can find them in the social hall afterwards.